wanna be down with the king.
Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston sports radio, John and Lance.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. John and Lance, along with Aaron here with you, as we got a full show for you today. Coming up in a half hour, former NFL, Titans coach Mike Mularkey going to join us to talk about those Titans and, everything else NFL. Heather Dinich is going to talk to us at 8:30 about the college football playoff poll, which came out yesterday and includes the University of Houston. Thank you very much. And then Dana Holgorsen will join us at 8:45 today because they play on Friday. Dana's normally here on Thursday. We're going to have him today because they play Friday night, and we will be giving away tickets to that game here today on our little radio show. So that's nice. The Cougs finally getting some respect. I mean, they almost had to put them in, right?
Yeah. Into the playoff. Yeah. I said they were going. It was easy. I mean, teams at the back end lost. Houston was going to move up.
Yeah. I mean, it took them long. I guess you just go, whatever. It doesn't matter. They're finally ranked. There is chaos ahead of us in the college football poll. Oregon has got Utah probably a couple of times, so they could well lose. They might lose this week. But there's a lot of talk about, even if somebody in the top four does lose, that it's not automatically Cincinnati's spot. As a matter of fact, we've got some sound. Gary Barta. Gary Barta is an interesting dude. He's catching a lot of flack. But Cole Kubelek is not all in on Cincinnati, that's for sure.
No.
As a matter of fact, Cole Kubelek was talking about Cincinnati. He's dead on. When he says they just have not looked all that good.
They haven't put 60 minutes of football together.
Right.
They just flat out haven't looked impressive for extended periods of time during their games the last few weeks. Now, I value winning, and I give you credit for going 10-0. That's hard to do. That's why there's only three teams in the country that can say that they are that right now. So you do deserve credit for that. And as I just mentioned, Notre Dame's a team that I feel like is a little bit undervalued, which makes Cincinnati's resume just that much better. There's just not a lot of other wins that you could look at and say, yes, that is a great football team. And then on top of that, the way that they've played recently, I know they came back and beat South Florida, but they had that Friday night to themselves last week.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of peed down their leg for the first 7, 8, 9 minutes of that football game. And I guarantee you, a lot of people turned it off and just said, yeah, thought so. Not the team that we thought they were, are they? And didn't wait around to see them come back and see what they could do for the last three quarters of that game.
Well, it is interesting. And I do they value winning? Do they value undefeated? They certainly don't with San Antonio. You get that.
I think they value how you play against who you play.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, if you're going to play a lesser competition, you got to smash them.
Yeah.
It's always been that way.
Yeah. If you don't think style points are important, you're wrong.
And historical goodness, if not greatness, matters because it elevates you at the very beginning of the conversation. Boise had to go through it in football years ago.
Central Florida went through it.
South Florida, you have to establish yourself as a powerhouse because then when they go into the season, you already have respect. And so that's the case. I mean, Cincinnati has earned respect. They've been around here. They've been doing this. They're well coached. You got a guy in Luke Fickell who is going to be at the top of everyone's wish list from a new head coaching standpoint, but I don't think what Cole is saying is necessarily wrong. I do think there's going to get to a point where you have so many losses with the other teams that you can make reasonable arguments to say, yeah, Michigan's pretty good, but what about this? Well, Michigan State, what about this? Well, Oklahoma State, well, what about this? I think it's going to – I don't see Oklahoma State winning out. If they do, they're going to be a very interesting team to watch because they're going to have to beat Oklahoma. I would presume, or maybe Baylor, I guess.
Both. They've already beaten Baylor.
But they may have to beat him again.
Oklahoma, then have to beat him again. Yeah, yeah. There's a chance. There's a chance it could be both. So we'll see. We'll see about that. But Gary Bartle was asked about how the committee values undefeated.
Well, being undefeated, you know, it's hard to do in any season at any level. But we also take. That's why sometimes we have teams ranked, you know, a one loss team or maybe even a two loss team someday ahead of an undefeated team. Because you look at the strength of schedule, you look at who beat who, and who's on that schedule, who they lost to, who they beat. About having a zero.
Yeah, it can't be just about having a zero.
No,
I mean, no. It just can't be. It's got to be about more.
It's got to be more than that. And in Cincinnati, you know, there is the argument they played Notre Dame and they played Indiana, but otherwise their schedule has been pretty soft. A win over U of H, now that U of H is finally recognized as one of the top teams in the country, will say something.
That's going to help.
But Kirk Herbstreit isn't convinced that even if Cincinnati goes unbeaten, that they're in.
Cincinnati becomes really interesting with 3 weeks left to play. If you look above Cincinnati and you look at Alabama and Georgia, who right now with the Bo Nix injury, I hate to just pencil them in as a lock, but I mean, it looks like they're going to Atlanta to meet head to head. If Alabama wins, Cincinnati's season's over. They go to a nice bowl game. Alabama and Georgia are both in. Georgia has to beat Alabama to kind of open the door. And then that would take Alabama out of the four, in my opinion. You can't just do the AP poll naturally, just assume, well, Cincinnati's at five. Put them up to six. Put them up in the top four. It might happen, but what's happening behind them, I think, becomes a huge story in these last 3 weeks. Teams like Oklahoma State, a team like Michigan, who potentially has some big wins in front of them. So Cincinnati is not a lock or a foregone conclusion, right? Because they're at five. If a team trips up in front of them, whether it's Oregon or Alabama or Ohio State, it's not an assumption that they'll be in the top four.
Well, Michigan would have to beat Ohio State to be even considered, which would knock Ohio State out.
Well, it would probably elevate Michigan in.
Yes, but it would knock. Right.
I mean, that's the thought. Is he didn't say it, but I was waiting for him to say it when he talked about what's happening behind him. If Ohio State, because you could think, well, why is it just about, you know, Alabama and Georgia? What about Ohio State? Well, if they get beat, it's probably Michigan, and Michigan probably jumps Cincinnati.
Yeah,
I mean, just right behind them. So that would be a jump situation where Michigan jumps ahead of Cincinnati. There are some in that scenario. The best case scenario is Ohio State for them is Alabama gets beat and fairly handily by Georgia. This is just for Cincinnati I'm talking about. And then Ohio State does what they do to Michigan, which is beat them soundly. If that happens, and then Oregon gets beat by Utah, then I think Cincinnati, and those all have, two of them are going to be favorites. Georgia's going to be a favorite against Alabama, and Ohio State's going to be a favorite against Michigan. If those two teams win like they're supposed to, and you have Oregon losing one of their games against Utah, I do think that Cincinnati jumps in.
Yeah.
If they beat Houston, and I think a big part of that is Houston catching this heater and being on a hot streak and starting to get some national attention. It's not a ton of attention, but beating SMU was a big deal for Houston. And, you know, similarly, I don't know, do they punish you if you're in a close game with Houston? Because Houston has some reputation now. I don't think it would hurt you like it would have. Do you get more points from a close game with Houston where people say, hey, you know what, that Houston team's a pretty good team? Or if you beat Houston badly, do they say, way to go, Cincinnati? Or do they say, oh, what a weak schedule. Houston was a pretend team. Like, I wonder how that plays out for them.
You know, you can shape it any way you want. And they will.
And what Kirk,
if they want them in, they want them in. If
what Herbstreit said was right. They start over every week.
Yep.
Like every week they start over brand new with their discussion points. It's not a basic slide up, slide down based on who just lost and who won. They are brand new discussions. So that's why people think that Cincinnati is going to have such a hard time, is because every week there's a new discussion where you can bring up new points for your teams.
Absolutely. Well, and Pat Fiutek on ESPN Radio.
I was listening to him last night. Were you listening?
Yeah.
It was good stuff.
It was good stuff. He talked about an undefeated Cincinnati team versus a two-loss Alabama team.
the real interesting part would be is if it were to somehow come down to an argument over that fourth spot, and they're arguing over Alabama versus Cincinnati, and they're having to make that call where, let's say, Cincinnati's 13-0 with one win, and that's pretty much it till now, but that's going to change if they win out. And an Alabama team, let's say they play Georgia really, really tough, and it comes down to like a last play, and they just look the part. That would be a really interesting debate in that college football playoff committee room. But I will say for the moment that no, a two-loss Alabama probably doesn't get in. Usually these things shake out. Usually there's going to be enough one-loss Power 5 conference champions to move up ahead.
Aren't we sick of Alabama anyway, though? Aren't we sick of them? Can't we have 1 year without Alabama in it, other than 19, other than when LSU? Can't we have another year?
I like seeing Alabama. I think they're always a great football team and makes for good football. Somebody who watches from the outside, I don't really have a rooting interest.
I have. I have a rooting interest to get them.
Well, your team sucks.
Well, no, I just don't like Alabama.
Well, when I say your team sucks, I have to LSU.
Yeah.
Your team could be Oklahoma State. It could be, you've got a lot of T-shirts in your closet.
Houston.
Yeah, could be Houston.
Not right now, my team's Houston, so, okay.
Cleveland Browns.
I got that. I got that shirt. I got the Seattle.
Some people give you free stuff, you wear it.
That's right. You're damn right.
You wear it. Now, I don't mind seeing Alabama, except the one reason Bill O'Brien being at the helm when they don't get in the playoffs would be pretty sweet.
You want to see Bill O'Brien celebrating on the field?
I don't think they celebrate anything. I don't think they're a national championship caliber team. I think they just, their defense isn't a great Alabama defense, and they are prone to offensive meltdowns over there. And he's been a big, and frankly, Bill O'Brien's been a big part of it. Having a freshman quarterback has been a part of it. His numbers look fantastic, but Bryce Young has at times just kind of gone cold in games. The numbers look good, but you know, he had 5 this weekend against New Mexico State. 5 touchdowns, that is. Sometimes Bryce Young just goes quiet in a half or in a quarter. The defense, there's not that great defensive front for Alabama. This doesn't feel like a great Alabama team. That's why if they didn't get in, it wouldn't be the end of the world, certainly, if they lost again to Georgia. If Oregon wins out, Ohio State wins out, and Cincinnati wins out, I think Alabama ends up at 5. I think Cincinnati's got a shot at getting in. But it's going to be tough because, you know, Michigan and Michigan State are both lurker teams, and then the outside shot is Oklahoma State tearing through everything and having chaos ensue. Now I don't think there's enough chaos to get them in over Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati would still get in, but you get wins over Baylor and Oklahoma, that's going to really help. Oklahoma State. I mean, it's really going to help.
It's getting interesting. It is getting interesting, that's for sure.
And they got to win over Texas when Texas used to play at least a half of good football back then. So that counts because
when
Texas
used to play a half.
Yeah, they would try for a half. Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, so that matters. No, like, that was only when Texas was in the middle of their second of the 5 losses.
Yeah, yeah. You were scared yesterday about Virginia coming in here, but the Cougs took care of business. We'll talk about that on the other side. Jay Billis was on with the afternoon guys, and we will hear from him about our Cougs, a basketball
game. Were you upset about attendance?
It was terrible.
I was surprised there were so many good seats with so many non-bodies.
Right. It was terrible. It was awful, and that's got to change, and it's got to change drastically. This is a Final Four basketball team, people, and you got a team that's going to your conference championship football game. Let's go. We got to start. This has got to get better. This is something that has been a problem here for a long time.
Oh, since I've been alive.
Yes.
It's been a problem.
Yeah. It has been a problem here for a long time, and it's got to change. Those people have got to start learning to be better than this. You know who's the best at this? At meat?
Pete.
Michael.
Yeah, no, we call it Pete. It's Michael. Was his dad.
Right.
It's a family. You know, Michael went to Lamar Consolidated. My dad was a football coach there. He was his coach 1 year in football. We
you
talked
coached
about
Michael?
It. Yeah. When my dad was at Lamar Consolidated. My dad got his start in the Houston area at Lamar Consolidated. Michael was there. His family and his dad Pete was a butcher doing it back then. And here's how this is the neighborhood butcher type thing. even when his place burned down, he had a huge fire. It didn't burn all the way down, but he had a huge fire that knocked him out of business. People were still buying meat from him because he has a separate areas that he could sell it. He was selling from other areas. His business barely even took a dent because so many people go in there. Hey, Michael, I'm sorry to hear that happened. And you know, is there anything we can do? Can we still get stock? You know, can we still get our product from you so we can, you know, help your business? He's like, yeah, absolutely. And the orders were flying in because once you start going and once that's your butcher, it's a game changer. And I mean everything from chicken to shrimp to pork chops to bone-in ribeyes, just anything that you can possibly imagine he's going to have for you.
Absolutely. He's the best.
His own bacon, his own eggs.
The best. And if you're looking for that turkey, he can make that for you as well.
199 orders so far.
Well, right, that was when he tweeted it out. I retweeted. I don't know if you did, but he's going to have more already. So if you're looking for that turkey, get there. It's at Richmond and Chimney Rock. It's Pete's Fine Meats. Just the best ever. It's Pete's Fine Meats.
G'day, mates. This is Sam Windsor of the Houston Sabercats. When I'm not playing rugby, I'm listening to John and Lance on the Bench. Go Sabercats.
The godfather of Houston sports radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, how about them Cougs? So they were originally an 8.5-point favorite last night over Virginia. Then it went down to 6.5. Then it went down to 5.5. You had it at 5, I think. It went down to 5.
I saw it at 5, yeah.
Yeah, at 5. They won by 20.
Stayed under, though.
Of course it stayed under. It's Virginia basketball.
Well, it was like there was some scoring. Houston was hitting threes, and there was some scoring, and all of a sudden. Now, they were scoring by Houston. Virginia wasn't scoring as much, and Houston did a really good job from half to half of strangling the life out of their offense. It's so funny watching Billis, listening to Billis talk about, they said they were at the practice, and boy, Kelvin Sampson still has a lot of passion. That's code for he was screaming like a maniac at practice.
Yeah.
Kelvin Sampson is still, this is why the idea that there are still plenty of younger players who are willing to be coached hard. But one of the things that was interesting watching that, John, is he would have his arms around a guy like, there was a box out that was missed, and he was furious. And he called a player over to the sideline, took him out of the game, but he put his arm around him and he was in his face, not screaming at him, but it was a focused attention on the player. But he had his arm around him, and you could tell the player is like, "Yeah, I got you." I think it does require a certain player to play for Kelvin Sampson. Like, you're not going to have these 5-star AAU babies. That's not for Kelvin Sampson, and you're not for him, and he's not for you.
Well, here's the deal.
He's got dogs and guys out of transfers.
Except Quentin Grimes comes here. Where was he at? Kansas or Kentucky? Which one was he at?
I think Kentucky. And now he's got a kid from UConn that comes guys transfer here.
Yeah, that's right. But they were a special player. They didn't feel whether they didn't feel special at wherever they were, or they didn't like or whatever the case may be. They've got to learn, you ain't going to get treated like a 5-star here. You know what you're going to do? You're going to work. You're going to work your ass off. And Quentin Grimes turned into a great player and led this team to a Final Four, which is what he was supposed to do there. And instead, he comes here and gets that job done because you learn the value of work when you're playing for Kelvin Sampson, that's for sure. I could certainly see him. I don't care how good the player is. You're going to play hard. You're going to play defense. And you're going to play within the offense. Kelvin Sampson don't fool around with players.
You have to defend. Yeah. You have to play hard for every minute that you're in the game. And you know what the result is? Taking last year a mismatched group of players, turning them into a cohesive unit like these. Look, they're not going to be the prettiest offensive team.
No,
they all crash the boards like crazy.
Crazy.
They defend hard and. It's still a recipe for success. He got to the Final Four with that team last year. Who are all the NBA stars on it? There's nobody.
Nobody.
And so this year, probably nobody, although I guess there's a couple of players who have a shot. But
when Trayvon Mark gets back, we'll see.
Yeah, it's the same scenario year after year. His guys defend. They play hard. They're still – this is – Kelvin Sampson in U of H is a great example in all of sports that if you are willing to play hard and excel on defense and outwork the other guy, you're still going to succeed on the collegiate level. And really, frankly, that's in all sports. Well, it's certainly in basketball and football. Playing as a team and outworking guys defense works.
You joked about it yesterday, switching Kelvin Sampson to the Rockets.
Yeah. I mean, I joke.
Can you imagine him trying to get the Rockets to do what this team is doing?
So this is the problem that's been around forever, and it's actually not brand new. You know, my dad talked about it with me when he went from college. He had been in college his whole life, then went to the Cleveland Browns, was his first job in 2001. And he just said, man, it is such a difference in terms of, A, you're with, you know, some guys are young guys, some guys are wealthy, some guys are grown men with kids. Like, it's a different dynamic than everyone's young and you're still teaching them. He said, you have to play politics, not play politics, but you have to learn how you communicate and all that stuff. Because if you go in with the same mindset, you would think in a vacuum that would work. Hey, the same thing I'm doing in college, I'm going to do in the pros. But you got to know how the room works. You got to try to not have negative influences in there in a position room that are, you know, because when you have that, it makes it hard to coach anybody. And I think that's one of the reasons that the Texans maybe were a little ready to get rid of DeAndre Hopkins, because they didn't love his influence on a team with the not practicing stuff.
Jadavian,
like,
too.
I think Jadavian for sure. And, yep. You know, like Cleveland and the Giants, both of them eventually wanted to get rid of Odell Beckham Jr. because they didn't like what he brought to the table. They just, it makes it hard on a position group or on a particular side of the ball.
Yeah, it's addition by subtraction. There's no question.
But Kelvin Sampson, you know, in a vacuum, if you could take this young Houston team and coach them like University of Houston, well, you get much better results.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you they'd have 3 wins by now. And that sounds like, oh, is that, were you just making a joke? No, I'm not saying they'd have a ton of wins, but you would have outworked Detroit. You would have finished off that
Denver game.
Denver wasn't playing well. You would have strangled a few more possessions out of them. And you know what happens when you play defense? You're in games in the fourth quarter where all you need is one hot quarter by a player. If you don't play any defense, you're not in games in the fourth quarter. You're getting your ass kicked.
136 to 102.
Jalen Green's a minus 32 or a minus 37. By the way, is there a new game we need to play called Guess Jalen's Plus Minus? The last two have been minus 32 and minus 37. That's the worst. I only see that when you get beat 40. Houston didn't even get beat 40. They got beat like, what were they beat? Like
34.
20, was it 34?
Yeah.
That's pretty high.
That's pretty high. Yeah.
That's pretty high. But, you know, when he was minus 32, it wasn't 34-point loss then.
No. Back to the University of Houston and Jay Billis. Jay Billis was on with the Wheelhouse Boys, and he had this to say about the University of Houston, and they're 15th in the country right now. Billis thinks they're going to be higher.
They've got weapons. It's just they're new. They've got a lot of new pieces, and even though a number of their players are very experienced, they're not necessarily experienced together. So over time, I think they'll prove out to be one of the country's better teams, and I think they'll be in the top 15, top 10 all year long.
Yeah. You know, listen, Memphis is in this. That's going to be a battle. Memphis is good. Memphis is going to be real all year long. So that's going to be the fight. And hopefully they play well and show against Memphis. We'll see if Trayvon Mark comes back. When Trayvon Mark comes back and played this year, they're going to be a better team. But they showed pretty well last night. That was good stuff. That was neat. And Billis said, listen, listen, the Aggies are the best football team in Texas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Aggies are the best football team in Texas.
Yeah.
They've got 3 losses now.
Probably, but I think Baylor doesn't have stinkers.
No, Baylor doesn't have stinkers.
Baylor might be the best team in Texas.
And Houston's playing really, really good football right now.
Yeah. You know what? I might go Baylor.
I don't know.
I've watched Baylor 4 times, dude. Actually, I watched Baylor more because I'm looking at their O-line for the Joe Moore Awards. Bohannon's played good ball. They run the football well, and that defense is pretty salty from Baylor.
There is no argument, though, which is who has the best basketball team in the state of Texas.
I think if they played today, I'd probably give a little bit of an edge to Houston, frankly. They're so good defensively. They can be elite defensively, because of the fact they've got 3 or 4 guards that don't need help. You know, they can guard the ball and keep it in front. And, you know, the sign of a great defense is that they're not put into help situations as often. And I think that's what they can do.
So there, suck on that, Texas. Of course, Texas got their ass handed to them by Gonzaga. So
Timmy went nuts on them.
Well, Timmy's a different dude now.
Timmy has been around now.
He's a weird dude.
He's a weird dude. I like Chris Beard over there, though.
Yeah. He's going to be good. They're going to be good.
I like him over there. Mm. How are the Aggies doing hoops-wise? I haven't seen anything recently. It's not good?
Not good. No. No, he's got a little ways to go. He's got a ways
Buzzers
to go.
Buzzers got some work to do.
Yep.
My boy Rock. I want them to win, so
I know.
I want to get up there and check out a game. Good win for U of H yesterday. They were on national television. I mean, it's a game they're supposed to win, but there's an injury, so you know, the thought was, hey, this is a team that could end up struggling a little bit, but you know what you do? Sasser steps up. You play defense, and then that is the definition of a boat race. Houston gets up 10-2. It went to 11-2. That's a boat race. Boat race, the phrase boat race means, you know, back when there used to be, what was it called, America's Cup, yachting thing? Yeah. I never even hear about it anymore. But once one group gets ahead, it's like, well, that's it.
It's over.
No, you can't possibly come back. That's the boat race. Houston went 11-2 to start the game. Boat race. They're too good defensively. You can't come back from the boa constrictor-like defense of Kelvin Sampson. So it's fun to see them. It wasn't an awesome game to watch, and I certainly wish there were more people in the stands. But it's just nice that we have a program to sorry, Rockets. I mean, maybe a lot of Cougar basketball talk in the future.
They're just better. Tillman's college team is better than Tillman's pro team. They're just better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Tillman wins either way. What are we talking about his university? Yes. Are we talking about his pro team?
Well,
no. But he still wins.
Well, we have talked about his pro team the last 2 days, but not probably in the manner in which he'd like it.
No, but he's not up. He sleeps in.
Yeah, they say money never sleeps.
Tillman sleeps, I think. 728 ESPN 97.5. When we come back, we've got Mike Mularkey going to talk some NFL football with us. Mike Mularkey, the former head coach of the Titans, is going to join us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Right now I'm talking about Scott McGrath and my peeps over at and listen, they're awesome. Scott McGrath, what he does with McGrath Pest Control, it is just awesome. He put the mosquito murdering system in our backyard, and it just can't be better. And so we never have any mosquitoes anymore. Now, it's going to get cold, so I get to turn it off because the mosquitoes go away. But as soon as it warms up again, listen, if you've got a pool, you've got kids, you want the kids to be playing in the backyard, you got a basketball goal back there or whatever you got, and your kids can't stand it because they're getting bit up all the time, try the mosquito. I'm telling you, the mosquito murdering system works. It's awesome. But there's also any kind of bug that you have in your home. Scott McGrath will come there every quarter, and he's going to get rid of them. He is going to make sure that you do not have bugs in your house because that's gross. It's quite frankly, it's gross. So get the guys over there. We have Hawaii comes to our house all the time, and whoever it is that comes to your house, they're going to do the perfect job. They do it every single time. You're looking for the best pest control. All you got to do is go to McGrathPestControl.com, McGrathPestControl.com.
ESPN 97.5. Please
stand by. Hey guys, Texas Custom Patios can turn your dream into a reality. If you think about something, if you say you want that, they can do that. And I don't care what you come up with. Well, we'd like to have an entertainment center in here. They can do that. We'd actually like to have a full-scale fireplace built in, not just a fire pit. We want a fireplace. They can do that. Built-in outdoor kitchen, completely deluxe kitchen. They can do that. You want to ask them about getting a chef to come out there and do a demo at your place that he builds for you. They can do that. I mean, it really doesn't matter what you ask for. They can do it. And I've been a witness to it in a party to this exactly. I've watched some of their projects unfold, and it's amazing. They've got some different videos that they've had over the years, and it's truly amazing to see what they do with outdoor living space. You could have a space outdoors. You don't know what to do with it, but my friends over at Texas Custom Patios, they have the design team and the build-out capabilities to do things that you can't even possibly imagine that are going to beautify your home, add value to it, and give you a fun place to hang out. TexasCustomPatios.com.
Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. John and Lance being joined right now by former NFL head coach, Titans and Jaguars, Mike Mularkey, joining us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coach, welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing good this morning. How about you guys?
We appreciate you being here, Coach. Thanks for hanging with us. Obviously, you've had your experience in Tennessee with those Titans. Derrick Henry going down, and it doesn't seem like they're missing a beat. They're playing really great defense, which they hadn't in the last few years, playing great defense right now. Coach, what are you seeing with this Titan football team this year?
A lot of consistency. They're finding ways to make plays when they need them. You know, they've won a lot of close games. That's kind of been their history the last few years. They've won a lot of, you know, 3 points or less, or last minute, a lot of them. And that's just a sign of a confident team, a consistent team. You know, Derek is a big key to their offense, obviously, but their defense has been very consistent. Some guys are starting to show up that, you know, I think they've been relying on and needed to. You know, I've always felt like if all three phases complement each other, it's pretty tough combination to deal with, and that just seems to what's be going on with Tennessee right now.
I find it interesting, Coach, to watch a guy like Ryan Tannehill, who was perceived as a certain type of quarterback in Miami, and then changed the narrative once he got with a running game and, frankly, an offense that really was able to utilize what he does best. It didn't ask too much of him. And now he's at a level of confidence where even with Derrick Henry out, it looks like he's a guy who later in his quarterbacking career has developed a confidence and a calm that maybe can propel Tennessee a little deeper than people expected, even without a guy like Derrick Henry.
I just, you know, I think Arthur Smith started it with when Ryan got there, Tannehill got there. They weren't asking Ryan to win the games. They were asking him to do what he was capable of doing. And the run game had a big part in his success, and it still does. And again, I think they're still doing the same thing. Nothing's changed since Arthur's left. They're, you know, very consistent with the run game, even running Ryan at the right times, not all the times, but the right times. I just think they're playing to player strength, which is key to me in this league, that you know, I ask a guy to do some things that he can't do. I think since Ryan's been there, he has really, you know, grown. But I think he's the same player as in Miami. There's just the role. They understand the role he needs to play, and he's played it well.
I want to ask you a quick follow-up question. Do you think one of the issues with the NFL over the last several years has been just too many teams counting on high-drafted quarterbacks to do just way, way more than they're capable of?
Well, here's my feelings on that. You know, you really don't want to be in a position that you have to draft one of those guys early, because if you are, you've obviously got a bad year the year before. But if you are in one of those positions, you have to take that chance that he is going to be that guy. If you look around the league with Mac Jones, San Diego, some guys that weren't the top, but they were still picked early. I mean, you got to take – I was in Atlanta, you know, Matt Ryan's rookie year. I was part of that draft and evaluating, and we did the quarterback tour. And, you know, we're sitting there, and the conversation was between Matt and a defensive tackle, and I'm like, you know, we don't want to be – what if he is one of these guys that can win every Sunday? You know, you got to take that chance. And obviously Matt's got an unbelievable career, but I think that's what a lot of teams are doing. You can't miss a chance to possibly pick one of these guys that can change your future of your franchise.
Former NFL head coach Mike Mularkey with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. And you mentioned Arthur Smith, and you were in that locker room in 19. And was the Falcons have just seems like they've got more. They've always had more talent, coach, than they showed especially after the Super Bowl, and it just went downhill. And yet this year he's got them in the hunt. They look like a better football team this year, don't they?
I think so. Yeah, Arthur's done some things there. You know, obviously he's brought the offense over from Tennessee, which is tough to defend if you stick with your plan. But he's done some good things personnel-wise. making changes that he needed to make in that locker room, which I think the players recognized that Arthur was doing the right thing by moving some guys on. And I think in the long run, it's going to be better for him. But, you know, I reached out to Arthur after this last game and just told him that was a speed bump and a long road. And, you know, every team has those kind of games. It's just what you do this next one that will make that one go away a lot quicker.
Yeah. No question. This is, hey, 4-5, you're still very much in it, especially
in that division, for sure.
Yeah, especially in the NFC. Can you pick out who's the best team in the AFC right now, Coach?
Best team in the AFC? Oh boy. Well, you got to give Tennessee some credit with who they're beating. It's not just the wins in a row that they're beating some good football teams, and I think Kansas City is always a threat, but you know their personnel hasn't changed. I just think they got to clean up that defense a little bit, but they're always to me a threat that you got to be worried about. I don't know. It's pretty. It's you know the division Tennessee and Houston are in this, obviously the weakest to me, the weakest division. And Tennessee obviously the strongest of the four, but there's not much coming out of there. And then I'd be always leery of New England.
They're playing better. I mean,
a lot better.
It's Bill Belichick this might be a little bit of a revenge year for Bill Belichick, where last year the talk was Brady, Brady, Brady. See, it was all Brady. Everything's all Brady. Well, anybody who knows football knows that it's a combination of Brady and Belichick. And this year Belichick's taking a rookie quarterback. And I'm telling you now, they're playing defense. They're staying within their concept. Offensively, they've got multiple running backs who are being productive. Well, you're right, Coach. That's looking like a more and more consistent team, like one of the more consistent teams, frankly, in the AFC each and every single week. What do you know it? There's Bill Belichick at the helm again.
Yeah, he's got some good coordinators there too. That helps. They're all like I said earlier with Tennessee, they're kind of complementing each other. They're kind of playing off of each other's hands, and that's a tough combination when you're going against teams like that. That they've got all three phases clicking at a high level.
I want to ask you from an offensive coordinator standpoint. You've been a play caller. You were the offense coordinator. You were the assistant coach of the year in 2008. You were obviously a great play caller as well. For many years, you've had success calling plays. When you start off in terms of scripting the beginning of the game, a lot of times 15 plays. Tell us how a script works, and if you ever deviate from that script, and how that goes down.
Well, my first coordinator job was with Steelers, and I think it was 15 plays at the time. I called all those 15. You don't call those 15 plays. Those 15 plays are first and second down plays. They're not, third downs are not involved in anybody's top 15 plays. Third down calls, at least from the guys I know that call plays, are a separate entity. The 15 are first and second down calls. And I only did it once. I went in order and we got the tar beat out of us. I never did it again. It's a feel thing. It's something that when you're putting it together, that was my favorite time of the week. Was Friday was done, the plan was in, I shut the door, and I always had my coaches on my offensive staff give me their, if they were the coordinator, what were the first two plays would they call, and why would they call it? What was the thinking behind these first two plays? Because you really want to start off the drive. You want to get a first down. And if you get a first down, who knows what will happen after that. It's those three and outs when you start a game that are kind of deflating. So I always involved the coaches, got their first two plays, because I never thought mine were the perfect ones. So I gave guys an opportunity, and I let them talk it out. And a lot of times I use their first two plays, or I use a variety of them. Or it'd be interesting, a lot of us would have the same first play. I'm like, hey, this must be what we got to start with. But the first two plays, once those two are in, I'm a big deception guy. I was going to have multiple, if I could have 12 personnel groupings in the first 15 plays, multiple formations, multiple shifts, motions,
tons of moving parts, obviously a gadget, maybe two gadgets in there. But the one thing I was consistent with, out of 15 plays, I never had more passes than I had runs. And I know it was a boring play caller because I like to run the football, but there's always eight runs and there's always seven passes. And those passes, and you know, they involve play action, you know, drop back. But I was going to try to keep you off balance early and hopefully have you reeling and over, really working that sideline.
Yeah, no, we see a lot. We see a lot of that with San Francisco and Shanahan, of course, the Mike Shanahan influence. We saw a ton of it with Gary Kubiak here in Houston. And, of course, Kyle Shanahan had, I look at what he's done with the quarterbacks, Matt Ryan, MVP, Rookie of the Year, sure. RG3. Matt Schaub here in Houston had his best year of his career with Kyle Shanahan, the 1 year that he was able to work as a play caller. Then you see guys like LaFleur coming out of that coaching tree. That's still that outside zone, that play action, boot action game, not as much boot action now, but that's still run the ball, play action off of it. It still works.
You're speaking my language.
I know I am. I know how you call plays.
You know, I played for Mike Shanahan at University of Florida, so I've known the dad a lot longer than I've known Kyle, but I really never admired Kyle more than when we were in Tennessee. I was coaching the tight ends, and we had Cleveland in Tennessee, and we were beating them pretty soundly at half, I think by maybe 24 points. And he came out in the second half, and he didn't go into a panic mode and go into a 2-minute. He kept the same offense going, and every drive they just put a drive. They scored by staying consistent with the offense that they put in, and they beat us. And I thought, man, that's something hard to do as a play caller when you're down that much and you know you only have so many possessions left. This guy, he stuck with the run game, and you know, he stuck with really the game plan and didn't panic. And that's when I first thought, boy, he has got a future ahead of him.
Well, did you, we loved what Brandon Staley had to say about the run game and the physicality coach is that you can't just throw the ball all over the place. You got to establish that line of scrimmage and domination with the run game. And it's so much
Make
more important
tackle.
than just, you know, being having a 50-50 play calling deal. It's about physicality in the football game.
Well, that's one of my favorite words is violence. You know, I like violent players. I like physical. I mean, I preach that from coaching tight ends to being a coordinator to being a head coach. My last year or my last 2 years there in Tennessee, you know, we had over our weight room the word ever, because I told these guys every team goes into the season and says, you know, we want to be the most physical offense, or we want to be the most physical group as tight ends, or I said, as a team, I'd like us to be the most physical team ever. I mean, ever. And that's going to be a hard thing to do. But I think it's one of the reasons we turned that franchise around, my staff and I and those players, was that they believed in that one common theme, and that was the physicality of the game and what we had to do to opponents. They're still doing it now. I mean, I think that's the identity of that team is still carried on from what we started back in 16. But that wins games. I mean, it's proof. I mean, if you want to take a physical team over a finesse team, I'll swear by the physical every day of the
college,
week.
College, pro, ever, all ever. Levels.
High school.
You'll have some outliers. I mean, it won't go 100%, but, boy, if you want consistent – results, it's physicality. Yep. Look at Alabama, yep. Nick Saban. Now look at Kirby Strong in Georgia. It helps that you can recruit a certain type of player.
Those two guys are great examples, but I'll even look at Kentucky. I mean, that's a different team because how physical they are.
Yep.
I mean, that whole football team, he's done a tremendous job. And a lot of that's because of the physicality. They go out and they try to beat the tar out of people.
Yep.
You know, what's funny is I'm on the selection committee of the Joe Moore Awards for offensive line. You know, we find the top college offensive line, and I'm in a text string with a bunch of former offensive linemen, and it was the first thing that came out was Kentucky this weekend. Oh my God, it was a slaughterhouse! They're absolutely mauling everybody in front of them this week, and that's how they've Logan Sternberg. Like, you know, that's how they've that's what their offensive linemen look like, and that's how they coach it. So, it's been fun to watch.
But it wins. It helps win.
Yeah, right.
It does.
Yep.
It does.
Yep.
It sets a tone. It intimidates.
Mike Mularkey, former head coach, right here on ESPN 97.5. Coach, thanks for your insights. We really appreciate it. Thanks for hanging with us this morning.
Appreciate it. Good talking football. I haven't been doing that very often.
Well, hanging with Grant, it's good to have you on, Coach.
You can do it anytime you want here, Coach.
That sounds good. Thanks,
folks. Well, actually, we're going to have you fill in. We're going to be out after Christmas. Yeah, so if you want to host a radio show, we got 3 hours a day for you.
Yeah, right here, Coach.
All right, let me know. I got a lot of time on my hands.
Mike Mularkey here with us on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Time to talk about my peeps over at Chastain Ford. I can't say enough good things about everybody over there at Chastain Ford. And just the job that they do. And it starts at the top with the leadership, with Patrick, with Joe. And Joe passed it down to Patrick, and Joe's dad passed it down to him. They've been doing it. The Chastains have been doing it in the city of Houston for over 80 years, selling cars in the city of Houston. And you don't become the number one commercial Ford dealership in the city of Houston unless you are just unbelievable, unless you just do a great job. Because the businesses, they want the service. They want they want it customized or exactly how they need it and want it. They want the price. They want it to be fixed if anything goes wrong. And you got a great product in Ford as well. So here's the deal: is if you're looking for, now they're doing that on the retail side as well. They're doing the same model. What do you have to be your payments? What do they have to be at? Because we'll get them there and we'll customize it exactly how you want it, not how we put it together. What do you want? You order it, you get it that way. You're looking for that kind of dealership, you got it at Chastain Ford. At ChastainFord.com or on 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead, just 5 minutes from downtown Chastain Ford.
You are listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back. 7:52. Short segment here. We went a little long with Coach Mularkey. That was good stuff. Good talking some football with him. one thing that we didn't play yesterday that we needed to play was Steve Sarkisian, his press conference. It got weird.
Yeah.
There is a guy. What's the guy's name that asked the question? The Wheelhouse Boys had his name. I'll find it. But he asked this question of Steve Sarkisian, and the video is just Sarkisian just standing there looking at him.
Is it Borat?
It's not Borat. It wasn't. No.
Was it Borat?
No, it wasn't.
I would like to ask you a question about the defense.
About this.
If the defense makes a poo in the pants, you can get a timeout.
I know. I can't do Borat. Yeah. I can't remember what Borat sounds like.
I feel, hey, look at me. I'm a Borat. No, Italian Borat.
That's Borato.
No, Borato.
Borato. This was the question, and I guess you got to turn it up a little bit because he's off mic. But here's the question asked of Steve Sarkisian, I think on Monday.
Good morning to you, Coach Sarkisian.
Good morning.
Coach, a couple years ago, one of my good friends and I were faced with a massive problem we couldn't solve. And in his wisdom, he said, you know, at this point, we need to stop and ask ourselves, what would an extraordinary person do in this situation? And this resonated with me the whole weekend. And I realized that of all the coaches who could be standing at that podium right now in those shoes, you are that extraordinary person. And you have a team of what I call coaching juggernauts. This is not only my opinion, this is a fact. I don't think anyone can dispute this. So my question as we write, you know, the Sarkisian era story, we're not even done with the first chapter yet, can you unfold some of the onion of what are you working on? How are you solving this problem? I realize that you might not even know. But, you know, I'm going to steal from Julian Edelman. It's going to be one hell of a story.
Yeah, I think first of all.
Oh, my God. That had to be a set. Like, was that a Barstool guy?
Or a Sarkisian.
You have a coaching juggernauts? That's not a statement of opinion. That's a statement of fact. All the things he said, oh, my gosh. I'm actually glad we don't have an answer. I'm actually, because that would have made me too nervous. Because apparently he answered it.
Thank you for the massage. And now here's my answer to
it. It takes an extraordinary person. Like, this is a setup. I do want the back. Did that guy lose a fantasy football league? And that's his, like, this is your punishment.
You have to call.
I've heard some horrific punishments. We don't have punishment in our fantasy football
league. No, we don't.
One was a toy that had to be in a invisible plain sight in the back of a car at all times. I've heard that one. Gosh. There's been tattoos on the leg. Alec is in one that involves something in a restaurant. I don't know. I can't remember what it is. He's got something. I thought, well, that's terrible. I would never do that.
You have to make a scene.
And I could see this as one. You have to ask the most outlandish question that sounds like you're being serious. It could be a group full of media members who are all together. Before the year is over, you have to ask one outlandish question that goes viral and gets on a national show.
And
I don't want to do that.
That is uncomfortable.
Because that's one right there.
That's it. He won. What?
My friends and I were sitting and thinking about
someone who's extraordinary. Man. Oh, my.
And you are clearly that man who has been labeled an extraordinary gentleman and thus tasked with creating a solution for an extraordinary situation. Like, oh, you know what I wouldn't want to see? Thank God there's no video, so I don't have to see everyone else's.
Oh, my God. Like, everybody
cringing. What would you do if you were in there?
I'd be like this. Oh, can you just? Oh, stop. Stop, please. What? No. I'm telling you, I worked in New Orleans, in Louisiana, and we would go to Saints. I was at the Saints every week, and what's his name played right field for the Mets was a
Strawberry?
No, it was from the '69 Mets.
Oh,
anyway, he would ask Jim Mora the worst.
Oh, Ron Swoboda.
Ron Swoboda.
Oh my God, he was famous. And Mora didn't like it.
Yeah. No. Mora hated him. And he thought every time he asked a question, you could see Mora just go, ugh. And it was just so uncomfortable.
He might ask the playoff question.
No, that was in Indy. That was in Indy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Playoff?
No,
The
questions were out of left field, and it was just so bad.
Well, let me ask you
sitting in that press conference with Sarkisian, you feel so uncomfortable.
Well, would you be more uncomfortable with that press conference question or with this one?
Okay, Draymond, here's an interesting question. So last year you visited game three, there no flood, you win. Game four, there was flood, you lose. And this year you visit us, game three, there's a flood, you win. Game four, there's no flood, game three, there's flood, you lose. Game four, there's no flood, you win.
Brother, you asked me about the flood in practice the other day.
Interesting question.
A guy thinks he's found a pattern, a flood pattern.
He got fired over that.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Interesting question.
I'm not sure that floods are, you know, like, hey, listen, there's a horrific flood and that killed people and displaced people. He was the cousin Greg of flood question answers from Asia, from an Asian country. That's what he was. No, I thought, but game four, the flood, press conference, bad. I want to see if Aaron can dig up some bad press conference questions coming up, because it is definitely cringeworthy, but hearing, there's something about there's two things that I go on rabbit holes. Press conference questions and a lot of times answers. Ow. And then the other one is live conflicts on television.
Oh, yeah, with between anchors. Oh. That's the best. And
I watched Larry David, but I know Larry David's fake, so it doesn't bother me as much anymore.
It bothers me. Michael Scott bothered me.
So did David Brent from The Office.
Yes.
But not like when it's real.
Yeah, right. All right, you know what is real? It's the new sports book, DraftKings Sportsbook at the Golden Nugget in Lake Charles. You can bet. You can win. We're going to go take a couple of days there over the Christmas holiday. We're going to go stay at the Nugget. It's going to be awesome, awesome, awesome casino, restaurants, pool, golf course, everything you could possibly want. And now the sports, the DraftKings Sportsbook is going to be there as well. It is going to be so, it's so much fun. I've always thought the only thing missing was the sports book, at, because it's so much fun to watch your games while you're gambling and watch your games and winning money and go cashing tickets. It's just so much fun. It's just so much better to do it in person and have it at, and everybody's cheering or booing or loving or hating, whatever it is, every game. And now you got all of that. At the, I'm telling you, if you haven't been to the Golden Nugget, you got to go. It's brand, it's still brand new. The hotel and the casino is still brand new. Wonderful. You'll love it. It's the Golden Nugget in Lake Charles. Get there.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.